A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a pharmacology puzzle that's been bugging me for years. On paper, it looks like it should be an ADHD drug. It increases dopamine. It promotes focus and wakefulness. It has a cleaner side effect profile than amphetamines in a lot of ways. And yet, it's almost never prescribed for IDIHD. It's an off-label adjunct at best, a narcolepsy drug that somehow never crossed over. The question is, why? What's actually different about how it works? What does the clinical data say? And is there a real role for it in ADHD, especially when depression is also in the picture?
This gets at something that's bothered me about how we talk about psychoactive drugs generally. We tend to lump things by what neurotransmitter they touch. Oh, it's dopaminergic, so it must be like the other dopaminergic drugs. But that's like saying a bicycle and a freight train are both forms of transportation. Technically true, misses everything that matters.
The dopamine of pharmacology discourse.
So let's start by understanding what modafinil actually is and what it isn't. Modafinil was approved by the FDA in 1998 for narcolepsy and later for shift work sleep disorder and obstructive sleep apnea. It's classified as a eugeroic, a wakefulness, promoting agent, not a classical psychostimulant. The half-life is about 12 to 15 hours, so it's a once-daily drug. And right away, you can see why people looked at it and thought, wait, this could work for ADHD. The standard ADHD pharmacotherapy landscape is basically two buckets. You've got your stimulants, methylphenidate and amphetamine-based drugs, and your non-stimulants, atomoxetine, guanfacine, quinidine. Modafinil doesn't fit neatly into either bucket. It increases synaptic dopamine like a stimulant, but it doesn't produce the same locomotor activation or euphoria. And it promotes wakefulness through pathways that standard ADHD drugs don't even touch.
The core question the prompt is asking is, why doesn't it get the same traction? And then there's a whole set of follow-ups. How different is its effect on ADHD compared to stimulants and non-stimulants? Does it have a specific role when depression and ADHD are comorbid? Is it a controlled substance? Can it be used alone? Can it be combined with stimulants? We're going to walk through the pharmacology, the clinical evidence, the depression angle, and the practical prescribing reality.
I think what makes this worth spending time on is that modafinil is a kind of Rorschach test for how we think about psychiatric drugs. It exposes the limits of our classification systems. It's not just a weak stimulant. It's a fundamentally different drug that happens to share one mechanism with stimulants. Understanding why it doesn't work as well for ADHD tells you something important about what ADHD actually is, pharmacologically speaking.
All right. Walking encyclopedia. Take us under the hood.
To understand why modafinil doesn't fit the ADHD mold, we need to look at its pharmacology in detail. And this is where it gets genuinely interesting. Modafinil does inhibit the dopamine transporter, DAT, but it does so weakly. At clinical doses of 200 to 400 milligrams, DAT occupancy is roughly 50%. Compare that to methylphenidate, which at standard clinical doses occupies more than 80% of DAT. That's a massive difference, and it matters for both efficacy and abuse liability.
It's tickling the dopamine transporter rather than sitting on it.
That's actually not a bad way to put it. The binding kinetics are different too. Methylphenidate binds DAT rapidly and blocks it almost completely. Modafinil has lower affinity and slower binding. The result is a more modest, more gradual increase in synaptic dopamine. But here's where it gets more interesting. Modafinil also inhibits the norepinephrine transporter, NET, and it does a whole set of things that stimulants don't do. It activates orexin neurons in the lateral hypothalamus. Orexin, also called hypocretin, is the master wakefulness regulator. This is why modafinil is so effective for narcolepsy. Narcolepsy is fundamentally a disorder of orexin deficiency. Modafinil essentially turns up the volume on the remaining orexin signaling.
Standard IDIED drugs don't touch orexin at all.
They don't. Modafinil also increases histamine release. Histamine is another wakefulness, promoting neurotransmitter, and it boosts glutamate in the cortex while reducing GABA. So you've got this multi-pronged wakefulness effect that operates through completely different circuitry than amphetamine or methylphenidate. The eugeroic distinction is real. Modafinil promotes wakefulness without the stereotypical locomotor activation, without the euphoria, and with much weaker reinforcing effects in animal self-administration models.
Which is why it ended up Schedule 4 instead of Schedule 2.
And we'll get to the scheduling question, but first let's connect this to ADHD specifically. The dopamine hypothesis of ADHD holds that the core symptoms, inattention, impulsivity, hyperactivity, arise from insufficient dopamine signaling in the prefrontal cortex and striatum. Stimulants work by massively boosting dopamine in both regions. Modafinil does increase dopamine in the prefrontal cortex, and that prefrontal dopamine increase is probably sufficient for some cognitive enhancement, improved working memory, attention, executive function. But the striatal dopamine increase is much weaker with modafinil than with stimulants, and the striatum is critical for behavioral inhibition, for motor control, for the kind of impulse regulation that's impaired in moderate to severe ADHDA.
You're getting the cognitive piece, but not the behavioral control piece.
That's the leading hypothesis. The prefrontal cortex effects may be enough for mild ADHD or for the purely cognitive symptoms, but for the full syndrome, especially the hyperactive and impulsive dimensions, the striatal dopamine boost from stimulants appears to be necessary. It's not just that modafinil is a weaker dopamine elevator, it's that the regional distribution is different, and the clinical consequences of that difference map onto what we see in trials.
Which brings us to the evidence. What do the trials actually show?
The landmark here is the 2006 Cochrane Review. 9 randomized controlled trials, over 1,100 children and adolescents with ADHD. Modafinil produced statistically significant improvement in ADHD symptoms compared to placebo. But the effect sizes were modest. The standardized mean difference was somewhere around 0.4 to 0.6, depending on the outcome measure. For context, stimulants consistently produce effect sizes of 0.8 to 1.0 or even higher. So modafinil works, it's better than nothing, but it's clearly inferior to first-line stimulants.
There were tolerability issues.
Higher dropout rates due to adverse events. Insomnia was the big one, which makes sense when you think about a 15-hour half-life wakefulness agent. Also, headache, decreased appetite. Not dramatically worse than stimulants on the side effect front, but combined with lower efficacy, the risk-benefit ratio just didn't justify first-line use. And then in adults, you've got the 2005 Taylor and Russo study, the 2006 Lund trial, the 2010 Biederman study. Most of these were industry-sponsored short-term 6 to 8 weeks, and they consistently showed modafinil beating placebo but losing to methylphenidate in head-to-head comparisons. The 2017 Spencer study was particularly clear on this. Modafinil superior to placebo, inferior to methylphenidate on the primary endpoint. It's not that modafinil doesn't work for ADHD, it's that it doesn't work as well as what we already have.
Which is a high bar. Stimulants are among the most effective drugs in all of psychiatry. Effect sizes of 0.8 to 1.0 are enormous by psychiatric standards. A drug that clocks in at 0.4 to 0.6 is effective in an absolute sense, but loses in a relative sense.
And this is the practical reality of prescribing. If you're a clinician and you have a patient with moderate to severe ADHD, you're going to reach for the drug with the largest effect size and the deepest evidence base. That's methylphenidate or amphetamine. If those don't work or aren't tolerated, you go to atomoxetine or guanfacine. Modafinil is, at best, third line.
If the pharmacology explains the weaker efficacy, what does the clinical data actually show for specific patient populations? And where does that leave us for the depression comorbidity question?
This is where the story gets more interesting, because modafinil has a second life in the depression literature. There's a whole parallel track of research on modafinil as an adjunct to antidepressants for major depressive disorder, particularly for residual fatigue and cognitive symptoms. The key reference here is the 2013 meta-analysis by Goss and colleagues. 6 randomized controlled trials of modafinil augmentation in major depressive disorder. The effect on fatigue was statistically significant, standardized mean difference of 0.39. But the effect on core depressive symptoms, mood, anhedonia, guilt, suicidality, was not significant. Modafinil helps depressed people feel less tired and think more clearly, but it doesn't lift the mood itself.
Which is fascinating, because it suggests the wakefulness and cognitive effects are separable from mood effects. You can be more awake and still depressed.
And this is where the ADHD depression comorbidity becomes relevant. ADHD and major depressive disorder co-occur at high rates. Some estimates suggest 30 to 50% of adults with ADHD have had at least one major depressive episode. Treating these patients is tricky. Stimulants can be effective for the IDIHD symptoms, but they can exacerbate anxiety, agitation, and insomnia, all of which are common in depression. There's also a concern, though it's somewhat debated, about stimulants destabilizing mood in vulnerable patients, so clinicians are often cautious about using stimulants in patients with active depression.
Enter modafinil, which boosts wakefulness and cognition without the mood, elevating or anxiety-provoking effects of stimulants.
The theoretical fit is compelling. You've got a patient with IDIHD who's also depressed, maybe on an SSRI already, and they're reporting fatigue, brain fog, difficulty concentrating. Is that the depression, the IDIHD, or both? Modafinil could theoretically address the cognitive symptoms and fatigue without worsening anxiety or triggering mood instability. The evidence, I should be clear, is preliminary. The 2015 open-label study by Koo and colleagues looked at modafinil augmentation in ADHD patients with residual symptoms despite SSRI treatment. They found improvements in both ADHD symptoms and depression scores. But it was open-label, no placebo control, no blinding, and the sample was small. We don't have large randomized controlled trials for this specific comorbidity.
The rationale is stronger than the evidence.
That's the honest assessment. The rationale is biologically plausible and clinically sensible. The evidence is a handful of small studies and case series. The 2018 case series by Patel and colleagues reported on modafinil combined with low-dose methylphenidate in treatment-resistant ADHD, and they saw some promising results. But case series are at the bottom of the evidence hierarchy. We're a long way from being able to say with confidence that modafinil should be routinely considered for comorbid IDIHD and depression.
Yet, in clinical practice, it's being used this way, off-label, in selected patients, often by specialists.
That's the reality. And part of what makes it usable is the regulatory status. Modafinil is Schedule 4 under the Controlled Substances Act. It's been Schedule 4 since 1999. Amphetamine and methylphenidate are Schedule 2. The practical difference is significant. Schedule 2 drugs require triplicate prescriptions in many states, they can't be refilled, there are stricter storage and record-keeping requirements. Schedule IV is less burdensome. Prescriptions can be phoned in, refills are allowed, the regulatory overhead is lower.
There's a lower barrier to prescribing modafinil than, say, Adderall. But it's still a controlled substance. It's not unscheduled like atomoxetine.
And this gets at a common misconception, that modafinil is non-addictive because it's a eugeroic, not a stimulant. The reality is that modafinil has abuse potential. Animal self-administration studies show that animals will work for modafinil, though less avidly than for cocaine or amphetamine. Human abuse liability studies show that modafinil produces subjective effects that overlap with stimulants, feeling alert, energetic, focused, but with less euphoria and less liking. In individuals with a history of stimulant abuse, modafinil can be misused. The Schedule 4 designation reflects this, lower abuse potential than Schedule 2, but not zero.
The not zero part is what people miss. There's a tendency to think Schedule 4 means basically safe, and that's not what the scheduling system means.
Schedule 4 means the drug has a currently accepted medical use and low, but not negligible, abuse potential. The benzodiazepines are Schedule 4. Modafinil's abuse potential is probably lower than benzodiazepines in most populations, but it's not absent. And there have been case reports of modafinil misuse, particularly in settings where it's used as a cognitive enhancer by students or professionals without a prescription.
Which brings us to the off-label question. Can modafinil be used as a sole agent for IDIHD?
It can be, and it is, but the evidence base is thin. There are clinicians who use modafinil as monotherapy for mild ADHD, particularly in patients who can't tolerate stimulants. Maybe they get too anxious, or they have cardiovascular concerns, or they have a history of substance abuse and the prescriber wants something with lower abuse liability. In those scenarios, modafinil is a reasonable off-label option. But there's no long-term efficacy or safety data in ADHD specifically. We don't know what happens after 6 months or a year. We don't have good data on whether the effects persist or whether tolerance develops. The narcolepsy literature suggests modafinil maintains efficacy over time, but IDIHD is a different condition with different endpoints.
The combination question, modafinil plus stimulants.
This is even more experimental. There are case reports and small series, the Patel 2018 series I mentioned, where modafinil has been combined with low-dose methylphenidate or amphetamine. The rationale is usually to augment cognitive effects or to allow a lower stimulant dose and reduce stimulant-related side effects. But the risks are real. Both drugs increase heart rate and blood pressure, so you've got additive cardiovascular effects. There's a theoretical risk of serotonin syndrome, though I haven't seen any documented cases. Modafinil weakly inhibits CYP2C19, which could theoretically raise levels of some SSRIs, but the clinical significance of this interaction is debated.
Combination therapy is specialist territory.
This is not something a primary care physician should be doing. If you're combining modafinil with a stimulant, you should be under the care of a psychiatrist who's monitoring cardiovascular parameters, watching for side effects, and has experience with polypharmacy and treatment-resistant ADHD. The evidence doesn't support routine combination use, and the risks are non-trivial.
Let's pull all of this together into something actionable. When, if ever, should modafinil be on the table for IDIHD?
I'd frame it in tiers. First-line treatment for ADHD remains stimulants, methylphenidate or amphetamine. The evidence base is deep, the effect sizes are large, and for most patients they work well and are well tolerated. Second-line is the non-stimulants, atomoxetine, guanfacine, clonidine, especially for patients who can't tolerate stimulants or who have comorbid anxiety or tic disorders. Modafinil is third-line. You consider it when a patient has failed or cannot tolerate both stimulants and non-stimulants, or when there's a specific clinical scenario that makes modafinil's unique profile attractive.
The specific scenario is comorbid depression with fatigue and cognitive symptoms.
That's the strongest case. A patient with IDIHD and depression who's on an antidepressant and still struggling with fatigue, brain fog, and concentration problems. In that patient, modafinil as an adjunct, not as monotherapy, not replacing the antidepressant, has a biologically plausible rationale and some preliminary evidence. It's off-label. The evidence isn't robust, but it's a reasonable clinical decision in the right patient.
What about mild IDIHD, where the patient or the clinician wants to avoid controlled substances entirely?
Modafinil is still a controlled substance. It's Schedule 4, not unscheduled. If the goal is to avoid controlled substances, atomoxetine or guanfacine would be the appropriate choice. But if the concern is specifically about Schedule 2 drugs, the prescribing burden, the abuse potential, the stigma, then modafinil might be a compromise. Lower regulatory burden, lower abuse potential, still some efficacy. But the patient needs to understand that the efficacy is also lower.
It's a trade-off. Less efficacy, less hassle, less risk, but not no risk.
That's the summary. And I want to emphasize the less efficacy part because there's a tendency in popular discourse to describe modafinil as a kind of limitless pill, the smart drug, the cognitive enhancer that makes you sharper without the downsides of stimulants. The hype has outpaced the evidence. Modafinil improves attention and wakefulness in sleep-deprived or fatigued individuals. In well-rested healthy people, the cognitive enhancement effects are modest at best. The 2013 analysis by Turner and colleagues found that modafinil improved attention and executive function in healthy adults, but the effects were small and inconsistent across domains. It's not a miracle drug.
The limitless pill is basically the nootropic equivalent of vaporwave, a nostalgic fantasy that's aware of itself as a fantasy.
And the reality is more interesting than the fantasy, honestly. The fact that modafinil works through orexin and histamine rather than just dopamine, that's novel. It's a different way of modulating consciousness. It's just that for ADHD specifically, the dopamine pathway is the one that matters most, and modafinil's dopamine effects are too weak to compete with stimulants.
Modafinil occupies a narrow but real niche. But the bigger story here might be about how we think about drug classification itself.
This is what I keep coming back to. We classify psychoactive drugs by their primary mechanism. This is a dopamine drug, this is a serotonin drug, and then we're surprised when drugs in the same class behave differently. But the primary mechanism is just the starting point. The binding kinetics matter. The regional specificity matters. The downstream effects on other neurotransmitter systems matter. Modafinil and amphetamine both increase dopamine. But modafinil does it slowly, weakly, and with a different regional pattern, while simultaneously activating orexin, histamine, and glutamate pathways that amphetamine barely touches. Calling modafinil a stimulant is technically defensible and practically misleading.
The glockenspiel of corporate approachability. It looks like a xylophone, it's played like a xylophone, but the sound is completely different, and you'll embarrass yourself if you treat them as interchangeable.
I'm going to use that. And the implications go beyond modafinil. The orexin system is now a major target for drug development. We're seeing orexin receptor antagonists for insomnia, suvorexant, lemborexant, daridorexant. And there's interest in orexin agonists for narcolepsy and potentially for other conditions involving excessive sleepiness or cognitive dysfunction. Modafinil might turn out to be the prototype for a whole class of wakefulness, promoting cognitive enhancers that work through orexin rather than dopamine.
Modafinil is the beta version of a drug class that doesn't fully exist yet.
That's one way to look at it. And for ADHD, the question is whether a more selective orexin agonist, something that boosts wakefulness and prefrontal cognition without touching dopamine at all, could be effective. Or whether a drug that combines modest DAT inhibition with stronger orexin agonism could match stimulant efficacy with fewer side effects. These are open questions. The patent on modafinil expired years ago, so there's no financial incentive for the original manufacturer to run large ADHD trials. But new chemical entities targeting these pathways could change the landscape.
Which means the modafinil for ADHD question might never be definitively answered with large trials. The drug is generic, the evidence is what it is, and clinicians are making decisions based on incomplete data.
That's the reality of off-label prescribing generally. Once a drug goes generic, the incentive to invest in expensive clinical trials for new indications evaporates. So we're left with the evidence we have. Modest efficacy, a plausible mechanism, a niche role in specific patient populations, and we're unlikely to get much more clarity.
To circle back to the specific questions in the prompt, how different is modafinil's effect on ADHD compared to stimulants and non-stimulants? It's weaker than stimulants for core ADHD symptoms, particularly hyperactivity and impulsivity. It may be comparable to non-stimulants for the cognitive and attentional symptoms, but the head-to-head data isn't there. For comorbid IDI, HD, and depression, it has a more compelling rationale, addressing fatigue and cognitive symptoms without worsening mood, but the evidence is preliminary and mostly from small open-label studies.
On the practical questions, modafinil is Schedule 4, so it's a controlled substance but with lower regulatory burden than Schedule 2 stimulants. It can be used as a sole agent for ADHD off-label, but it's third line, appropriate only after stimulants and non-stimulants have failed or aren't tolerated. Combination with stimulants is experimental, carries cardiovascular risks, and should only be done under specialist supervision.
The bottom line is that modafinil is a pharmacologically distinct agent that doesn't fit neatly into the stimulant or non-stimulant boxes. Its weak DAT inhibition and orexinergic effects give it a unique profile. Lower abuse liability, less euphoria, but also weaker efficacy for core ADHD symptoms. It's not a replacement for standard therapy. It's a niche option for specific scenarios.
I think the deeper lesson here is about humility and psychopharmacology. We have these tidy theories. ADHD is a dopamine disorder. Stimulants fix dopamine, therefore anything that increases dopamine should work. And the messy reality keeps pushing back. The brain doesn't care about our classification systems. A drug that looks like a stimulant on paper may behave very differently at the circuit level. And understanding those differences is how we get better at matching drugs to patients.
The dopamine hypothesis is a map, not the territory, and modafinil is one of those drugs that reminds you the map is incomplete.
And that's where the field is going, I think. More nuanced understanding of circuits and receptor kinetics, less reliance on the broad neurotransmitter categories. The future of ADHD treatment might not be more dopamine, but dopamine in the right places at the right times, plus orexin, plus histamine, plus who knows what else. Modafinil is a glimpse of that future, even if it's not the drug that gets us there.
For the listeners wondering whether modafinil is worth discussing with their doctor, the answer is maybe, in specific circumstances, with appropriate expectations. If you failed stimulants and non-stimulants, or if you have comorbid depression with prominent fatigue and cognitive symptoms, it's a reasonable conversation to have, but don't expect it to work like Adderall. It's a different drug with a different profile, and the evidence is modest.
If you're a clinician listening to this, the framework is, third line for pure ADHD, consider as an adjunct in comorbid depression. Don't combine with stimulants outside specialist settings and be honest with patients about the evidence gaps. Modafinil is a useful tool in a narrow set of circumstances. It's not a game changer for the general ADHD population.
One open question I keep thinking about. Will we ever see large, long-term trials of modafinil for ADHD? The patent is long expired. There's no financial incentive. Unless a new formulation or a new indication creates a market, the evidence base is probably frozen where it is.
I think that's right. The action is going to be in new chemical entities. Orexin receptor agonists, maybe dual orexin dopamine agents, drugs that were designed from the ground up to target the circuits modafinil stumbled onto. Modafinil was discovered serendipitously, like a lot of psychoactive drugs. The next generation will be rationally designed, and they might make this whole conversation obsolete.
The accidental prototype that pointed the way but never quite arrived.
Which is a fitting legacy, honestly. Modafinil is the drug that showed us wakefulness and attention could be modulated through non-dopamine pathways, opened up the orexin system as a therapeutic target, and then settled into its niche as a narcolepsy drug and occasional off-label adjunct. It changed the conversation without winning the debate.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1980s, researchers studying epiphyte ecology on the Yamal Peninsula discovered a 19th century Russian Orthodox manuscript preserved inside a hollow larch tree, where it had been insulated by a thick mat of lichen for over a century. The lichen had absorbed enough moisture to keep the pages from drying out and cracking, but its antimicrobial compounds had prevented fungal decay. The manuscript was a hand-copied liturgical text, and the marginalia included detailed notes on reindeer migration patterns written by a priest who had clearly been very bored during the long Arctic winters.
Right.
That was unexpectedly vivid.
Modafinil occupies a narrow but real niche in ADHD treatment. Third line, off-label. Best considered when depression comorbidity creates a specific clinical rationale. The biggest story is what it tells us about drug classification and the limits of the dopamine hypothesis. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.